It's July 27th, I'm Colm Quinn, and welcome to The Readout. It's not just the news cycle that moves quickly these days. Trade disputes, things that usually are more snail than Cessna, are now moving at rapid pace too. Less than 8 weeks after the Trump administration announced its tariffs on steel and aluminium imports from the EU, a hasty visit from EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker seems to have stopped the trade war in its tracks. An agreement's been struck that will see the EU buy more soybeans and liquefied natural gas from the US, and a mutual agreement to dismantle the steel and aluminium tariffs.
We're going to do a lot better after we do this deal and other deals that we're currently working on. Likewise, the European Union is going to do better, stronger, bigger.
Unless one party would stop the negotiations, we hold off further tariffs.
Immediately following his meeting with President Trump, Juncker came to CSIS to speak in front of a packed house and make the case for continued cooperation between the US and the EU.
Yes, we export more goods to the United States than we import. But when it comes to services, the US has a trade surplus. This is not a reflection of a lack of openness or reciprocity. It actually shows that the trade between us is working.
Trump was quick to celebrate the meeting as a victory for his hard-nosed trade policy during a rally at a steel mill in Illinois.
We have reached a breakthrough agreement yesterday with the European Union, commonly referred to as Europe.
So, what was agreed, and is the worst over? I sat down with Scott Miller, one half of The Trade Guys, our weekly podcast on all things trade. He's also a senior advisor at CSIS. The US announced its tariffs on the EU with aluminium and steel, aluminium for Americans. And this was May 31st. Less than 8 weeks later, it looks like now with Juncker visiting the White House and working things out with Trump, that things have been worked out. Is that narrative work?
Well, we don't quite know yet. For me, the question is, what do we know? Okay. One of the things we're learning is everybody knows there are a lot of balls in the air on trade right at the moment. But it appears to me and to others I talk to that it's President Trump who's controlling the tempo of all the actions. And so he's pretty much in control and was well suited to essentially arrange the timing for this particular deal with the Europeans. Now, he's also a masterful messenger on this thing. Everybody quibbles with the precision of his statements, which aren't always there. But it's in terms of the way he persuades voters on trade, he's very consistent, very clear. What he does really well is, first, he always frames trade policy in a narrative of unfairness. His initial statement is all about how unfairly our trading partners have treated us for so long. So he talks about somebody asks him about the trade war. He'll say, well, we've been at war for 30 years and losing, okay? This is nothing new. But he always talks about unfairness, and then he talks about how he made the difference and has declared a luxurious victory with what's happening. And importantly, the wins are always described concretely. You'll never hear the president step to the microphone and say, we've gotten a new agreement for disciplines on digital economy. He'll never say something like that. He'll say soybeans or natural gas, okay, or in this case, just gas, or autos, or steel. He's always very concrete and tangible in what he announces and declares as success.
Let's dig into the agreement. The EU will start buying more US soybeans. And forgive me for being kind of a city slicker. I was reading the Washington Post. They reported that more people are Googling the word soybeans than ever before, than in all the history of Googling the word soybeans. What is Europe going to do with all those beans? And why is it now going in that direction?
Well, this is another characteristic of what we've learned about the president's trade policy so far, is the substance is often less than meets the eye. And in this case, look, Europe has been an importer of soybeans for a long time. Soybeans are principally traded, and they're a good source of animal feed. So if you're raising pigs or raising livestock, soybeans can be easily converted into a very nutritious food. It's a great way to capture nitrogen, great way to build protein in livestock for later consumption. In any case, that's why soybeans are traded. Basically, the United States, Argentina, and Brazil are the major producers of soybeans. And Europe, while it does produce some soybeans, has imported beans from a long time. They tend to import from just for efficiency and logistics, they have imported from Brazil and Argentina. The United States has mostly exported to East Asia and the Pacific, but there's a global trade in soybeans.
Okay, and the liquefied natural gas. That's interesting because it could have, you know, strategic implications too, because obviously Europe relies very much on Russia for that kind of thing. Is that going to be a game changer?
Well, look, at the NATO meetings, that was a key criticism of President Trump, Chancellor Merkel, and other Europeans of their reliance on Russia for natural gas. Thanks to the unconventional energy production through hydraulic fracturing, the United States has abundant supplies of very inexpensive natural gas. Now, there's a logistical problem. To exporting natural gas, if you don't have a pipeline, which there is not one that runs underneath the Atlantic yet, and probably won't be, you have to liquefy it, pressurize it, and it takes an export facility that liquefies the natural gas, and it takes sailing vessels, ships that are specially designed to carry that liquefied natural gas. The infrastructure is being built, but keep in mind, unconventional natural gas in the United States is a relatively recent phenomenon. In fact, up until about a decade ago, the U.S. traders in natural gas were building facilities to receive natural gas, not to send it. Okay, so some of the early export facilities were literally converted from import facilities because that was the game plan. So we really don't have enough export facilities to fill this. So what we have, you know, this is where it's less than meets the eye. Europe is probably not going to consume as a continent more soybeans. They may get them from the U.S. instead of Argentina or Brazil, but the consumption is not going to go up. And the natural gas, while there is a reason to believe this would be a good project in the long run, I don't think the infrastructure exists for anything in the short run.
And probably would have been happening anyway?
Yes. In fact, most hydrocarbons are not covered by trade rules. They follow the Adam Smith rule. So to the extent that there is an economic basis for the trade, it'll take place. Now, what's interesting is I'm trying to figure out what we got out of this, what the United States got. Europe got a suspension of future tariffs, which I presume means if there is an action on the investigation into national security investigation on automobile imports, that Europe will not be subject to a tariff on automobiles, which is a big win for Europe if that's what they mean. But the president said we would be negotiating a tariff-free world in industrial goods, that we would move to zero tariffs in all industrial goods. Here's what confuses me. We have, since the Obama administration, had an ongoing negotiation with Europe called TTIP, or the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. It's been moribund lately. Negotiations stopped sometime, I think, in 2015 for practical purposes. But it was never repudiated by the Trump campaign or the Trump administration, unlike the Asia version of this TPP, which has a different story. But so I don't know if we're just restarting TTIP or if we're cutting TTIP down to a negotiation on industrial goods tariffs only. I don't know what the plan is. If that's the plan, there's a big missed opportunity there because, look, when it came to TTIP, the old and difficult issues are all basically agriculture, and the new and difficult issues are all in services, particularly digital services. And excluding those from the negotiations seems a shortcut. In any case, but at some point, somebody's got to go back. Mr. Juncker's got to go to the Commission and the Council and get a mandate for this new negotiation, I presume. And someone will have to, in the administration, will have to notify the Congress that they have a different plan. All of this is questionable where it leads. As somebody who worked on trade agreements for a long time, I have no idea how you pass one of these in the Congress without the support of the agriculture community. So an industrial goods only tariff reduction, I don't know who's in for this and how you get sufficient momentum in Congress to pass it. But in any case, that's what we have. And that's, once again, we have a concrete announcement, soybeans, gas, and we have a very speculative finding underneath it. Nobody's really sure what all this means. At least, and I think the markets took a sigh of relief, at least it means no auto tariff threat in the middle term or near term for Europe.
And if I'm Xi Jinping, do I look at how Jean-Claude Juncker has approached this and say, maybe this is something China needs to do? Maybe there's a way out of these trade spats.
I would, certainly. And now there are two models. Okay, there are two examples, I should say, and they're worth examining. The U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement was an irritant to the president and his administration. It was severely criticized, even when there were tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The president and his team would criticize the unfairness of the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. Like this European agreement, it was settled with a minuscule amount of window dressing. A few minor changes. Given the intensity of the criticism, it was no way in balance. But we declared victory and moved on. In the case of South Korea, that was the first done. That was last fall, I believe. In any case, what and Mr. Juncker played this very well, in my view. I thought he was going to have a very short meeting at the White House, and it turned out he delivered and came with a package that and came with a method that was that was acceptable to the president.
I heard he had color-coded flashcards.
Whatever he did, whatever he had, it worked. Now, I will speculate about one more dynamic behind this. It is possible that the Trump administration actually took to heart what the automotive industry writ large said about auto tariffs just a week ago, which is there was uniform and almost unanimous opposition to the idea of tariffs on automobiles. And it may have been the president was looking for a way to get out of a bad policy, a way to get off the hook, and cut a deal while the threat of a tariff still had some value. In other words, he may have already made the political calculation that I can't impose this tariff, so let me get something. You know, let's make hay while the sun shines. Let me get something while I can. And so he may have been in the mood to make a deal. This is what I meant early on by when I said he's controlling the tempo. He may have seen this as a moment where he can get something tangible and move on to more frankly difficult issues like China.
Right. And to try and bring it back to kind of a more man on the street perspective, most people in their day to day aren't trading in steel or aluminium. And so because this seems to have been, well, seems to being the main thing here, seems to have been resolved so quickly, will anyone from a consumer perspective notice any bite?
This is the brilliance of the president's messaging so far. Look, yesterday he was at a U.S. steel facility in Illinois. And he was celebrating the addition of jobs with the workers of that facility. It was great television. He had the opportunity to tell that audience what a great deal maker he was and relayed this colorful story of how he dealt with the Europeans and how other people had failed before and how the great economic news was, which, by the way, had a very good GDP report, 4.1% growth in the quarter. So that's the optics of this. And unfortunately, the news cycle moves on. So there's very little public awareness of the fact that there are 20 jobs in the steel consuming industry for every one in the steel producing industry in the United States. And, you know, in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, the General Motors and Chrysler both reported an outlook that was negative on future earnings because of what they called material costs. That's aluminum and steel. So the evidence is there that these steel tariffs, while they have a few supporters in the producing industry, are hurting downstream producers and will have a toll on the economy. The way the president has controlled the narrative, I think he gets away with this and comes out with all the benefits. And now we're talking about other things instead of the potential costs.
Seems to be a trend.
After a while, you begin to realize this isn't just luck. There's some skill involved here.
And that was Scott Miller closing out our show for this week. Until next week, if you have any feedback on the show, you can email me at cquinn@css.org or find me on Twitter. This has been The Readout. I'm Colm Quinn. Thanks for listening.